And today I thought I would start a series of talks on the asava, the taints or the fermentations, which is just another way of saying the defilements, the bad things which exist in our hearts. But the Lord Buddha gave specific teaching on what he called the asava. It's a classification of defilements into three parts, which are kama asava, fermentations in or defilements in regards to sensuality, and then bhava asava, defilements in which have to do with becoming, being this or being that, or not being this or not being that, and then avijja asava, defilements which have to do with simple ignorance. So there are, in this classification, there are three kinds of defilements. Ones which have to do with our attachment to sensuality, liking good sights and sounds and smells, and disliking bad sights and sounds and smells and so on. And then the ones having to do with wanting to be something, wanting to be this, wanting to be that, attachment to status or position, and so our attachment to not being this or not being that, not being something, not being something in particular. And then the defilements which have to do with simple ignorance, simply not knowing, so not knowing what is suffering, what is the truth of the cause of suffering, and so on. Through simple ignorance we become defiled, we do bad things, we say bad things simply out of ignorance. So these three classifications, these are three reasons why bad things arise. And so the Lord Buddha gave a teaching on how to be free from these things, these defilements, these things which in the Pali terms it means they pickle or they cause the mind to become fermented, to become useless, to become rotten. When we think of it, like makes our mind become rotten, like a rotten apple or a rotten tomato. And the Lord Buddha gave seven distinct ways of overcoming these defilements, these things which cause our minds to become rotten, which are called the taints or the fermentations, the asava. And these seven ways are put together, they are a complete description of the meditator's life, the life of a monk or a nun or simply a simple meditator. These seven practices are the way to become free from taints and defilements, free from all sorts of unwholesome things which exist inside of ourselves, to make our minds pure and to make our hearts clean. So today I'll list off the seven, but I'll try to go into one of the specific teachings every day, one or two depending on the time. So the first one is tasana pahatapa, the asava, the defilements, the taints, which are to be removed through seeing. The second one, samvara pahatapa, which the taints which are to be removed through guarding. So through seeing, through guarding. Number three, patisevana, through reflecting. Number four, adhivasana, through bearing, or forbearing, or enduring. Number five, parivacana, through running away, or through avoiding. Number six, vinotana, through abandoning. And number seven, pavana, through developing. These are the seven, they're verbs. They're seven actions which we undertake to rid ourselves of all unwholesome tendencies, to make our minds pure and bright and clear and calm and clean at all times. So the first one, tasana pahatapa, the ones which are to be gotten rid of through seeing. Well, the way to get rid of taints, simply by seeing. And so the Lord Buddha goes into a long explanation of what it means to be someone who who is able to remove the asava, the taints, which exist inside. And he compares two different types of people. The first type of person is someone who is untrained, who isn't interested in going to see wise people to listen to their teachings, isn't interested in meditation practice, is an ordinary worldling who is very much interested in the world and interested in things which bring sensual pleasure, things which are of course impermanent and suffering and non-self. And he says this type of person reflects on things which are not to be reflected upon and fails to reflect on those things which are proper to be reflected upon. And the things which are not to be reflected upon are those things which, when you consider them, when you attend to them, when you develop them, it leads to the increasing of the asava, increasing more desire, more sensual desire, more desire to be this, to be that, ambition to become things, and more delusion, more ignorance, which develops our ignorance or create, for instance, taking drugs or alcohol or so on. So people who go around breaking the five precepts, or even not breaking the five precepts, but being unrestrained in their activities, in terms of sensuality, be it in romance, or be it in food, or be it in entertainment, or so on. Or people who are unrestrained in their ambitions, or unrestrained in their delusions, in their ignorance. They consider the wrong things. They consider those things. When they see something, they reach for it. They run after it. They're always looking for more, looking for something which is pleasurable, something which will bring them sensual pleasure. The Lord Buddha says another type of person is a person who doesn't attend upon those things which are not to be attended upon, and reflects upon those things which are to be reflected upon. And those things which should be reflected upon are those things which decrease and do away with the asava. So attending to mindfulness, developing morality and concentration and wisdom, developing the mind to become, to see clearly, to do away with sensuality, to see that happy feelings, neutral feelings, suffering feelings, they're all impermanent. To see that becoming this or becoming that, whatever we become, we will have to leave behind in the end. And whatever we run away from will always in the end catch up with us. Will come back to us again and again and again. We'll always be running away from that. And coming to see clearly means to do away with our ignorance. To see clearly the truth of suffering. To see why we suffer. And to see the cessation and the path out, the way out of suffering. So the Lord Buddha compared these two types of people and then said, how is it that the person who attends carefully, who considers things in the right manner, not dwelling in the past or worrying about the future, how is it that they come to be one who sees? So this is, the first part is through seeing. And here the Lord Buddha taught the Four Noble Truths, and we can explain them. The Four Noble Truths are something like the core of Buddhism, or the very basis of what it means, what is meant by the word Buddhism, or the Buddha's teaching. It's the teaching which the Lord Buddha gave first when he first set in motion the wheel of Dhamma. After the Lord Buddha became enlightened under the tree, the Bodhi tree in Bodhgaya, in Makata, in India. And then he walked the 120 kilometers, or however far it was. He walked to Isipatana in Saranat, which is just outside of Varanasi. And he taught the five ascetics. These are the five meditators, or the five ascetics, who followed after the Lord Buddha, the Bodhisatta, when he went forth when he left home, before he became Buddha, when he left home, he practiced for 6 years torturing himself. And these five monks went after him, thinking that these five ascetics went with him, thinking that he would, if he became enlightened, he would then share the teaching with them, and they would be able to see clearly following after him. They would be his first disciples. But at that time, the accepted practice was to torture oneself, either to live in the household life in luxury or to go in the forest and torture oneself physically. And the Lord Buddha, after 6 years, realized that torturing himself physically did nothing to bring him closer to wisdom and understanding. It had no causal relationship with the realization of enlightenment. And so he gave it up, and he gave up the practice of torturing himself and found what is called the middle way, which is not torturing oneself and not indulging in sensual pleasure. It's simply being mindful, and creating morality, doing away with all unwholesome states, clearing the mind, calming the mind down, focusing mind and concentration, and developing an understanding, which is simply in line with the reality around us. But when he started to practice the middle way, these five ascetics thought he was going back to his old practice of indulging in luxury, and they knew that this surely wasn't the way out of suffering, so they left him. And they went to Varanasi, to Isipatana. So the Lord Buddha walked back there to find them and to teach them the teaching. Now at first, of course, they weren't interested. This is an interesting point. Nowadays we can see that there's a parallel with the first disciples of the Lord Buddha, that nowadays most people don't want to see the Buddha's teaching. They don't want to hear teachings on suffering. They don't want to hear about how sensual pleasures are not going to satisfy them. They don't want to hear about how the world is not going to bring them happiness. And they don't want to hear about how they have to give up their attachment to sensuality in order to find happiness. Most people nowadays want to find happiness in these things. Or else we see the opposite, just like these ascetics, as people have gone out of their way to torture themselves in many different ways, either the body or the mind, and people developing all sorts of wrong views, all sorts of views based on science, what they call Western science or even Eastern science. The different sciences in the world. These are different views, different understandings of the world. And we develop these views, and when it comes to the teaching of the Lord Buddha, they're not really interested. They don't really see the point. Most people nowadays will believe that at the moment of death, there's nothing more. And at the time of the Buddha, this view was prevalent as well, that death is the end of existence. At the moment of death, there is nothing. And this, of course, comes with an understanding based on what is called science of the death of another person. Because, of course, none of us can empirically measure our own death until it comes. But we can measure someone else's death, and from all appearances, it looks as though the person in front of us has died, has ceased to exist. But empirically, of course, things are quite different, because empirically inside we can see that the objects around us are arising and ceasing, seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, feeling, and thinking. They're arising and ceasing all the time, and there's no cessation, there's no ceasing to exist. Now, at the moment of death, as to what happens is up to speculation. And that's all it really is this speculation that at the moment of death there is nothing more. Somehow this process of arising and ceasing somehow stops. And of course we'll all have to see for ourselves when the time comes. But at any rate, these five ascetics were an example of how these sort of wrong views can get in the way, because at first they weren't willing to listen to the Lord Buddha, and this is also very common nowadays. People not interested in hearing or not interested in taking on the teaching, not interested in trying it out because of their own views and their own way of looking at things. the Lord Buddha was able to convince the five ascetics that something was indeed different. At the very least, he had changed in some way, and that perhaps they could listen to what he had to say. And they became malleable, and they were able to let go of their view long enough to listen, at least to consider what the Lord Buddha was going to say. And first he taught that there was a middle way, and then he explained what were the Four Noble Truths. And this became the core of Buddhism. So this is what we have to see in Buddhism when we practice the Buddha's teaching. What does it mean to do away with evil, unwholesome states through seeing? It means to see four things. To see the cause of suffering. To see what is the truth of suffering, to see what is the cause of suffering. To see the cessation of suffering, and to see the path, the practice which leads to the cessation of suffering. These four things means to do away with unwholesome states through seeing. And how does it work? First of all, it's important to understand this being the core of Buddhism, that it's clear that the Lord Buddha taught suffering. He taught all about suffering. And even though the word suffering is only an English word, it really is an appropriate word. It's important to not to water down the Lord Buddha's teaching or try to find a way around it to make people feel happy, make people feel comforted that actually the Buddha really taught happiness. Well, the truth is the Lord Buddha taught the ultimate happiness, the ultimate freedom from suffering. He taught that real happiness is simply having no suffering. Just like perfect health, for a doctor, perfect health is freedom from sickness. So the doctor will never talk or be concerned very much about perfect health. He'll always be concerned about the sickness. If a person is healthy, then there's nothing that the doctor has to do to go in and fix. But for a person who is sick, for whatever sicknesses exist, it is the doctor's duty to go in and to explain and to give medicine and have the patient take medicine in order to be free from the sickness. So the Lord was exactly like a doctor, and it was, except he had a much more difficult time than the doctor. I mean, doctors will have a difficult time with patients who don't want to believe that they are sick, who don't want to accept the fact that they have a sickness. But of course, the Buddha had a terrible time, because no one wanted to consider that they were sick. No one wanted to think that these things inside of them were wrong, that the views and the conceits and their attachments and their cravings and their wantings and all of these things were wrong. And of course, in those times, just as today, people only want to follow after their desires. And of course, that's what they want. Desire is wanting. So they have this wanting. And as a result of this wanting, any talk about giving up the things which they want is of course an unwelcome thing. And so often find the people who are most able to understand the Buddha's teachings are those who have had their hopes dashed, or had their loved, the things, their objects of affection disappear, be they people or objects or so on. People who have seen what it means to be without the objects of our attachment. People who have lost loved ones, people who have gone through states of loss or suffering, people who have sicknesses, people who are dying. These people are the ones who are able to understand, yes, what the Buddha said was really true. There is great sickness here. Even people who are in perfect health physically, but when they lose a loved one, they might kill themselves, simply because they can't stand to live without the other person, or without this, or without that. And so these people are able to see that there is a great sickness which they are not able to, which medicine, which they by themselves are not able to overcome. And so they come to say, well, who is it, or what is it that will make us be happy now? And of course, the objects of the sense are not going to make them happy at that time. They can drown their sorrows in alcohol or in drugs for so long. And if they're smart, they'll be able to realize that that's not going to lead them out. If they're not able to realize that, then they will drown themselves until they die and go on to be reborn in a very terrible place. But people, in general, in the world, people who are successful, who are who have everything they want, or who seem to have everything they want, are very good at convincing themselves and trying to convince everyone around them, and refusing any idea to the contrary that they themselves have great happiness, that they themselves are always happy, that they themselves are not moved, not affected by suffering. And whenever suffering arises, they quickly forget about it, they quickly put it behind them. During the time it's there, they cry and they moan and they wail and they take all sorts of measures to become free or to forget the suffering. And then when it's gone, they quickly put it behind them and pretend it didn't happen, and pretend that it forget that it might happen in the future, or never stop to consider that it very well might come at any time again. And they say again to themselves that they are in great happiness. So the Lord Buddha gave this teaching, which is very powerful. And it's important that it be powerful, that it be working. Because otherwise people will never wake themselves up, will be lost and will continue to destroy this world and to destroy themselves and make it a less and less harmonious and peaceful place to live. Until we can realize that we are destroying ourselves in this world around us. Until we can realize that, we will never become free from suffering. We'll never be free from the threat of suffering in the future. So the Lord Buddha taught that there is suffering, that there is a problem with simply living our lives in indolence, living our lives as though there were no tomorrow, or there are no consequences of our actions. And he taught this, and he taught this so that people who were able to see would be able to have a way out. So people who had seen suffering, or who could remember when the Lord Buddha talked about this being suffering and that being suffering, they would be able to recollect the suffering which they'd had in their lives and how they were truly unable to deal with it. Or when they saw suffering in other people, those people were truly unable to deal with it. And he taught this, giving people an understanding of the truth of this, the truth of this fact, that there was a problem which had to be addressed very quickly before the problem came to us or became so desperate that we weren't able to cure it. And then he taught the cure, or he taught the reason why the suffering exists and how we could cure it, how we could remove the cause and find a cure. So the Lord Buddha taught the cause of suffering is called tanha, or craving. And you can translate it as you will. Craving is probably the best translation, but it means any sort of greed or wishing or longing for things to be like this or not be like that, or wishing for sensual desires, sensual pleasures. And we can see this when we practice meditation quite clearly, and this is what the Lord Buddha meant by seeing. First of all, seeing suffering. When we sit and we rising, falling, we can see our minds wandering here, wandering there, without any rhyme or reason, and we can see how this creates stress in the body, and stress and headaches, and how it creates a general sense of unease. Or when we are wishing for things or wanting for things to be like this or that, or when we hold on, when we have a happy feeling and we really enjoy it and really like the feeling, how this then leads us to suffer when the feeling disappears. We find in the morning our practice was very peaceful, but then in the afternoon when the feeling went away, our practice was very horrible. And we can see in this way how our craving, our wanting for things to be like this or be like that, is really and truly the cause for suffering for us. And this is what the Lord Buddha meant by tasana pahatapa, to remove these things through seeing, through simply seeing this. Next time we feel happy, we won't be so quick to reach for it or grab for it or hold on to it. We will be more wary and see the happy feeling simply for what it is, as something that's impermanent and therefore unsatisfying. Unsatisfying, and we won't hold on to it as me, as mine, as under my control. And when we see like this, we will not have to then come in contact with the suffering. We will then not have to become party to the suffering which results from craving. We will be able to see through all pleasurable states, all unpleasurable states, all states which arise in our body or our mind. We'll be able to see through them and not be moved by them or be pushed into craving and therefore clinging and therefore suffering. And this is the cessation of suffering, when there is no more craving, when we are no longer reaching out for these things because we have seen how they are not truly happiness, then this is the cessation of suffering. There is no matter how much pain we might be in, because we have no attachment to happy feelings or unhappy feelings, these feelings cannot bring suffering to us. Now, wanting to be this, wanting to be that, holding on to the past or the future, these things can no longer affect us. There is no more holding on to either past or future, good or bad. Through simply seeing that this is suffering and there is a cause, the cause is that very holding on. And the path, the fourth noble truth which we see is the path which leads thereto, which is of course the path of mindfulness. When we simply acknowledge rising, falling, or when we're walking and we say stepping right, stepping left, and we're able to see clearly the truth of the body and the truth of the mind. We're able to see good states, bad states, suffering, what is the cause of suffering. We do this by simply watching. There's a saying, if you want to know, you have to see. If you want to see, you have to look. If you look, you'll see. If you see, you'll know. And these three things, this is through seeing. The first of the Lord Buddha's teachings on how to do away with the asava. And so that is the Dhamma for today. And tomorrow we'll go on to the other parts of the teaching on how to do away with the asava. And that's all for today.